This is your NPR news station, 90.3 WBHM and 91.5 WSGN. I'm Andrew Yeager. When a city neighborhood rebounds, it's typically the story of investors buying cheap property, building, and then attracting new residents. That runs the risk of pushing out current residents who are often poor. As we explore Birmingham's revitalization this week, we take a look at an example of an alternative model, worker cooperatives. These are businesses owned and controlled by their employees. They're more common in Europe. For instance, a Spanish co-op has grown into a multinational conglomerate. I spoke with journalist Steve Fries, who reported on a community effort in Cleveland, Ohio, to start worker co-ops as a way to revitalize a depressed area of the city.
They created three companies. The companies include one that focuses on solar power, one that is a large hydroponic lettuce growing facility, and one which is an industrial laundry. And so in theory, the universities and the hospitals will need lettuce. They will need laundry. They will need, clean energy, those sorts of things. As a co-op, they could also give the employees a stake in the company. So you take these people who have been chronically underemployed, and not only are they working for a reasonable wage, but they're also gathering some equity in the companies that they're working for.
So these were getting going in the late 2000s. By the time you went in to look to see what happened, what did you find?
What I found was that there had been about $25 million spent on these startup operations, that in an area where there are about 44,000 residents whose incomes are definitely in the poverty range, these opportunities were extremely scarce. I mean, even in 2014, they were employing about 90 people.
Spending $25 million employing 90 people after about 5 years, why did things turn out that way?
Well, what's interesting is listening to how all of the people who were on board with this, many of whom are really quite sharp and successful business people, missed a few very basic things. The assumption was the hospitals, for example, and the universities would need their laundry done. The reality was those operations have long-term contracts with large industrial laundry companies. They were able to peel off little pieces of it, but there was no real way to just give this small startup all of its business. And then the other problem that came up in terms of things like the laundry, they didn't think about scaling it. They didn't think about the question of, okay, once we get all the business or all the laundry that we can handle in the operation that we have built, that's it. There is no more growth potential unless you buy another building and get some other investment to build another laundry. So it took a few years for them to figure out what to do about that. And from what I understand, the lettuce operation has improved. But even in the most recent story I saw, which was about, I don't know, a few weeks ago in the Cleveland Plain Dealer, they're saying that they might soon be profitable. In a lot of ways, the hype on this operation, the hype on what was going on in Cleveland, got way ahead of the reality.
One interesting detail in the piece was the fact that for those who did get better jobs, whose lives did improve, they didn't necessarily stay in the neighborhood. And I would think that if you want to revitalize a neighborhood, that's kind of an interesting conundrum.
Yeah, I mean, but how else will you do this? I mean, if you're somebody who is now making some money, you have the right to move and live wherever you want to. Nobody can force you to stay in a certain area just so you can keep your job, so far as I know.
When you think about what's happened in Cleveland, is this just a case of something flawed with the underlying ideas, or is this just poor management or poor business skills?
In some cases, it's been some questionable business decisions. They put people in charge of some of these operations who had no history in those businesses. In other cases, I think there are some fundamental flaws in these operations. Obviously, the growth potential, having contracts and not having contracts before you start these businesses is important. But also, one of the differences between doing this now and what they did in Spain in the 40s, they lived in a different banking era. they lived in an era where they could create their own banks and they could create their own terms, and there wasn't that much regulation. It would be incredibly difficult for a co-op to create its own lending operation that had different rules and different levels of risk than whatever the banking laws of the United States allow.
What has been the impact of these cooperatives in Cleveland?
I feel like it's been very little. My impression is we're talking about a city with a tremendous amount of poverty. And even if they had doubled the amount of people they were employing and giving these opportunities to since I was there, which they have not, but even if they had, it would still be a couple hundred people benefiting from this operation that does not seem to have much of an opportunity to make particularly large growth. And also, we're talking about an area with thousands upon thousands of fairly poor people and underemployed people. It's interesting to academics. It's interesting to other cities looking in. But I don't know that there is much evidence right now that this operation has made any significant difference to the city at large.
That's Steve Freese, a journalist who wrote about the Cleveland worker co-ops for the online news site Take Part. We've got a link to his piece at our website, wbhm.org.